Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights at the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights at the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
For your transgression, you receive the atomic boot to the ass!
Thud!
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up!
Ha ha!
Shazoo's the turtle! to fill the terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
People who brought you the fantasy about the despicable video that caused the Benghazi massacre, who used the IRS as a weapon to go after their political enemies, the ones who chip away at our First, Second, and Fourth Amendment rights, only to turn around and trumpet their right to hide behind the Fifth Amendment. The latest to come out of the Obama administration? Just a little slap at Syria. Really, Mr. President? Now you want the American people, after all they've been through, to take you at your word and blindly follow you into yet another Middle East conflict? Hello and welcome to Justice. I'm Judge Jeanine Pirro. Thanks for being with us tonight. This week, the Obama administration seeks congressional approval to strike Syria. The narrative? We go in for just a couple of days, do a quick military slap, no intention of regime change, and then call it a day. We'll show them. But right now, Russian and American destroyers and an untold number of submarines are lining up off the Syrian coast. Iranian fast boats are already in the Persian Gulf, where other American warships are positioned. And since we've given them fair warning, Mr. President, because of your latest indecision and dithering, our enemies in the Middle East have been moving assets and preparing to retaliate. It's teed up. Once we start the bombing, the Syrians will call on their allies, Iran and Russia. Now, let me see if I understand this. We're looking to bomb Syria because of an alleged chemical attack, risking a potential face-off with Iran and Russia in a move that will ultimately benefit who? Al-Qaeda? Mr. President, why for 2 years did the United States and the world stand silent as the civil war unfolded in Syria? Well over 100,000 casualties, women and children, victims of bombings and shootings, missile attacks, executions, dismemberment, and decapitation. Now, 1,400 of the over 100,000 are believed to be victims of chemical weapons. Now, we need to engage in a dust-up with Syria? Mr. President, why is killing one way more heinous and worthy of our response than another? And why now? And what about Israel? We know you don't like Bibi, but hell, don't you have an obligation to not put our allies in harm's way? And your reason?
I didn't set a red line. The world set a red line. Congress set a red line when it ratified that treaty. My credibility is not on the line. The international community's credibility is on the line.
That's just not true. It's another one of your false narratives.
A red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
A lie is a lie is a lie. You said it, the world heard it, and the world heard you say it. Syria heard you say it, and they gave you no mind, and they did it anyway. And by the way, if you didn't draw a red line, why are we going in? No one respects us. No one fears us. You've done this to us. Why draw red lines when everyone knows that your red lines are nothing more than green lights over and over again? But I got to give you one. You're right. Your credibility is not on the line. With all due respect, Mr. President, you have no credibility. To be credible, one must be clear and constant. Your actions must be swift and certain. You lost credibility when you left Americans on that rooftop in Benghazi, but fired up Air Force One to go to your Las Vegas fundraiser. That was a clear signal to the world that it's open season on Americans, even including an ambassador. And by the way, whatever happened to, we're going to bring them to justice. It's been a year. Where's the justice? And now you want to hide behind Congress so you can blame them for your inaction Or you say maybe you'll go in anyway. What's that all about? It's amateur hour in Washington. American lives weigh in the balance. We are a war-weary nation. Even you admit that. We are tired of spilling the blood of young American men and women in a part of the world that despises us. And to add insult to injury, you don't even take care of the vets when they come home. Many of them with fewer body parts and certainly more demons than when they left. And if you're so dead set against the killing of children that you are willing to send us into yet another conflict, will you guarantee that the 1,000-pound Tomahawk missiles that you will heap on Syria won't kill children? Or are they simply your collateral damage? Will the murders of those children be less significant than those we go to avenge? Tell us. What is the American strategic interest? What is the end game? Did you think this one out? Or is politics so much a part of your calculus that it's all about you? A shot across the bow to hold Assad accountable? Degrade his capacity to carry out future attacks? Deter this behavior in the future? Do you really believe after this man killed over 100,000 people that he's afraid of you? And since you don't intend to take Assad out and expect him to weather this, you make the United States look even weaker. Little Syria survives an attack by the most militarily powerful country in the world. Well, at least we were until you showed up. And whose side are we on anyway? Take a look at this. These are the Syrian rebels whose side you want to take. They are killing young men, execution style. And if the use of chemical weapons is violating international standards, why isn't the international community standing shoulder to shoulder with you? The Brits, for the first time since 1782, have refused a request for military action by their prime minister. NATO has rejected your call. The European Union has rejected your call. The UN, of course, is still investigating. And the Italians? Well, they're too busy dancing with Berlusconi at one of his bunga bunga parties. And your good friend Putin had to give you a little lecture on international law.
Only the UN Security Council could sanction the use of force against a sovereign state. Any other pretext or method which might be used to justify the use of force against a sovereign state is inadmissible and can only be interpreted as an aggression.
You don't poke a stick in the eye of the tiger and expect the tiger to not react. The rebels you want to support are Al-Qaeda. You remember them? They took down the World Trade Center a few blocks from here. Ansar al-Sharia, you remember them? They massacred 4 Americans in Benghazi. And the Muslim Brotherhood, you remember them? You threw our friend Mubarak under the bus for them. And it's since worked out so well in Egypt. And by the way, no Americans were massacred in Syria like they were in Benghazi. So we should go to war for you to save face after making a dumb statement that you now say you didn't make? Have you thought this through? Your feckless foreign policy and paper tiger image have forced your hand. Even your friend Dianne Feinstein agrees with me.
Once the administration made this call, though, I think there is a real need for us to back it up. Or America becomes a paper tiger.
Mr. President, in the past, when America was respected and feared, no one would even dare think of crossing an American president's red line. Remember, you said that you wouldn't go to war unless there was an imminent threat to national security. What case have you made? Last I checked, Assad has never attacked us. And by the way, didn't you get elected as an anti-war president? Didn't you vote against the last war in Iraq? And here we are, 5 years into your administration, and American men and women are still on the ground fighting boogeymen in caves in Afghanistan. who will return to their tribal enclaves as soon as we leave. And your Iraq withdrawal thing, that one hasn't worked out so well either. And Senator McCain, we all respect you for your service and the sacrifices you've made for this country. But in the end, maybe you're right. Maybe it's all just a game. Mr. President, can you understand why Americans are so dead set against this? We look at wars in the Middle East through the prism of Iraq and the lies and false narrative of Benghazi. You want us to trust you, but you're not credible, clear, or concise. Why should Americans take it on faith that what you're saying is even true? There's no end game, and we can't afford, nor do we want, a World War III. And speaking of that, Mr. President, didn't you win the Nobel Peace Prize? Yeah, you're the one. Give it back.
year. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. Thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look.
Hello everybody, it's old King Shaziz the Terrible sitting around the round table waiting for some of the honorable knights to call in. Hope you all doing well out there. You know, I played that clip there of Judge Jeanine there, or Jenny or whatever her name is. She's going all off on Obama there. That was a pretty good deal. While I have a few questions about some of the things she talked about, here we are, man, sitting on the verge of World War III. You know, we got this knucklehead up there claiming to be the president. I still can't believe that man even got elected. But that's neither here nor there, you know. It seems to me, by listening to this particular clip of her going off on the guy there, means to me the mainstream media is getting a little scared themselves, because they see that we're literally on the verge of World War III. While I still think they don't give out the straight truth, I think that the closer we get to let's say D-Day, for example, I think that eventually, I think they'll get a little closer to the truth. But, hold on a second, I got distracted. Yeah, that's it. King Shaziz the Terrible on Sunday only. Anyway, wait around for some of the honorable knights to call in here. I think I seen Dublin around there somewhere. He said he's going to call in. But anyway, you guys... So, we're listening to this clip of her talking about all the atrocities and all the craziness going on out there. And it just... to me, man, I think the world's waking up. I think the mainstream media is starting to get scared. I think the governments of the world are starting to get scared, because they're starting to notice that they can't pull the wool over everyone's eyes like they used to as easy. now that you have access to alternative media such as No Borders Radio and Awake Radio and We Roar Radio and Shaziz Radio and all the different networks rebroadcasting. Hey, we got Dublin there. Let's see if we can get him in here.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you great, brother. How's it going?
That's going good. Nice and warm in Spain.
So, welcome to the nights, brother.
Yeah, another good day, another good Sunday.
Yeah, it is. So did you hear what I was playing earlier with the judge basically giving Obama the rundown?
No, I must have missed that bit. I only tuned in about 5 minutes ago when it was music and
Yeah, well, finally, the mainstream media starting to, go out there and tell that man what's what, you know. Of course, we all know he's just a puppet. Everybody else, all the basic presidents of this country and pretty much every country out there are just puppets. The folks at the top with the money pulling the strings, that's who really makes the rules, but... What they didn't count on was we the people starting to build all these networks throughout the internet and the world and starting to reach across international borders and start working with each other on ideas and solutions and essentially giving the representatives of the world a run for their money. And you know, of course, they've had a lot longer time to prepare, and so we still got our work cut out for us, but. I got faith, man. I think the people are speaking, and I think they're speaking loud. What do you think?
It's a mix. It's a completely mixed bag. As you say, the people are making their voices heard better than before, and the mainstream media is finally having to listen because they're getting worried too. They they're not immune to atom bombs either.
Well, yeah.
I was disappointed in Putin's message to America. I was very disappointed in that one. Have you seen Putin, the Russian president's message to the American people?
No, I must have missed that one. What did he say?
Well, that's the problem. You know, he's saying why would America and Russia get into a fight with each other? You know, like, basically we share the same aims, like, why is America backing up these extremist Muslims? You know, the Muslims are a problem to Russia, they're a problem to America, so why don't we get together and exterminate the Muslims? And I thought, well, that's not exactly, a nice thing to be saying, at the end of the day, that, Russia just wants to exterminate the Muslims and the Americans are using them to fight Russia, and, they're also a problem to America. It was disappointing. It will not go down as one of the better speeches of... from a Russian point of view, it's very pragmatic. He made a very simple argument. He said, the Americans want me to give up Syria, And he quoted some American who said, the thing is... Syria is my son of a bitch, So why would I give up my son of a bitch? I don't think. I know the Russians are very very short, and a lot of people don't understand that the Slavic languages, there isn't really, particularly Polish, there isn't really the word thank you in it. You know what I mean? It's not something they do, very short and abrupt and to the point.
Sort of no nonsense. Are you talking like sort of no nonsense kind of people?
Oh yeah. Well, that's what I always say about the Russians. When you look at Russian history, they're not expansionary. They don't have a huge history of what I would call expansionary conquering of the rest of the world. They seem to be pretty happy enough just running Russia, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas other parts of the world are quite expansionary, particularly the British Empire and things like that. So they tend to, you know, only look inwards to some extent. You know, the communism made them kind of look outwards to try and spread this communist stuff, but Stalin wasn't really interested in it. You know, he was only tokenism for him, and even Brezhnev apparently wasn't that interested in expanding world communism. They just wanted to control Russia, and communism was a handy way to control it. So,
well, either
it worked, they were happy to go with it.
either way, wouldn't it be fair to say that their plans beginning to unravel on them because of we the people from all over the world just basically not buying into all the lies and propaganda any longer?
Yeah, their story is falling apart at the seams. But unfortunately, their ability to pull the rabbit out of the hat, you know, is very good. So you have to try and outguess them. What's the next move?
Oh yeah, well I'm not by any means saying that this is over or anything. I'm just saying that it's kind of encouraging, even though it's kind of like we're down to the fourth quarter of the game. And they could one of the two teams could throw a Hail Mary pass and win the game, but we the people still got to keep our eye on the ball because even though this lady come out there in opposition to the president and all his BS that he's been doing since he's been president. You know, he's talking about saving the children while he's still doing drone strikes and stuff like that. So he's contradicted himself throughout his entire term as far as I'm concerned and a lot of the main alternative media is concerned. And now you actually hear the mainstream media coming out there. While I still question their, their news reporting skills and the truthfulness of their news reporting skills, it is kind of encouraging to hear that now they're getting a little bit on the nervous side. See, it isn't just the Fox News Network, it's MSNBC and ABC and all the different networks out there are actually coming out and talking out against what's going on, see? You're starting to see a little bit of worriness, or they're getting worried, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, well, hopefully that's the case. I mean, it's very hard to know, because in the last 15 years, the development of the weapons in the American Army and Air Force is astronomical. I mean, I don't know how far ahead of the rest of the world they are. If they're 100 years ahead of the rest of the world, well then they really are not worried about any nuclear bombs. They can blow them up before they leave the silos in Russia, and they can blow them up before they leave the silos in China.
Well, I'm sure.
Equally so,
I'm sure of that.
It's possible the Russians are more in advance, or the Chinese are more in advance. We don't know.
I'm sure of that. Have you heard of the space fence?
Well, they've got all sorts of stuff up there.
This goes from
so much junk up there. It's unreal.
Dublin. This goes from the ground to space, and it's supposedly used to track satellites and space junk. But they realize that they can use this thing to blow satellites out of the sky if they like.
Oh yeah, well, that'll be the first thing in any nuclear war. I mean, all the satellites in outer space will get taken out by all the different sides, to try and blind them. But there's an awful lot of junk up there, and a lot of it's got laser equipment and all sorts of stuff that can probably defend against, nuclear attack and the devil knows what. They got laser equipment inside of 747 jumbo jets.
Well, don't you think that that's all the more reason why we should not, and I repeat, should not get into World War III?
Oh, yeah. I'm all for, let's not go there. I don't think the Americans have the full story on how far the Russians are developed, because the Russians are very funny. They might be behind, but they always seem to have the world's best brains. And when they suddenly need to develop weapons, out of the woodwork come these best brains, and they built in the Second World War things like T-52 tank and the Russian aeroplanes, and you know, all these things contributed to the defeat of Hitler, because he had totally underestimated the ability of the Russians to rapidly develop new weapons that were superior to even the German weapons. And so you can never underestimate the Russians. The Russians are a bit like a bear. You know, you poke them and you poke them with a stick, you know, while they're sleeping. But, you know, eventually once they wake up, you know, you're going to be in trouble. You know, that bear's coming after you.
You can't underestimate the Chinese either, because they're pretty ingenuitive, you know.
They're pretty ingenuitive, too. And the only thing about the Chinese is they're not, or at least they haven't shown any historical signs of being expansionary. So,
I don't know unless you want to go back to the history of Genghis Khan.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you go that far back...
And that guy should have got the Nobel Peace Prize, because B.O. got the Nobel Peace Prize, don't you think?
Well, they're up there. They're both good candidates for the Peace Prize. You know, war is peace and peace is war. You know, I go along with that. it's definitely... I don't know. I still think... as one guy said, the Russians didn't put in two formations of aircraft, you know, into Syria. He reckons that, you know, if the Russian aircraft were in Syria, you know, Syria would definitely be able to withstand an attack by America.
Well, so I tell you what...
Sorry, go ahead.
Regardless of who could withstand an attack, I tell you what really makes me nervous about this whole situation is that we've actually got like five warships. Russia's got warships over there. China's got warships. Iran's got warships over there. And so here we are. We're standing on the edge, brother. Everybody's out there bucking up against each other, waiting to see who's going to drop the first boot. And I'm telling you, if that first boot goes down, It's Katie bar the door. It's, you know, if you got them, shoot them if you got them kind of thing. You know, like 4th of July. And so we're standing on a dangerous point in time right now. And if this thing goes awry, if one spark's lit underneath that fire, boy, I'm telling you what, we're going to see World War III. And it isn't going to be the elite of the world who pay the price. It's going to be we, the people of the world, who pay the price. What do you think?
Well, that's why I'm working on what I'm doing at the moment, contacting as many alternative media as I can to inform them that I'm of the honest opinion that they're going to trigger a few false flag events in Europe, and one of them being in Dublin. And, you know, a couple of days ago, it was reported that some nuclear warheads were moved from an Air Force base and moved to South Carolina, and then the Senator Graham of South Carolina came out the same day that these nukes were being moved up into his area to say that Al-Qaeda was imminently going to blow up some harbor, I forgot the name of it, that's in South Carolina.
So essentially what they're saying when they say Al-Qaeda is going to blow something up means the CIA's at it again?
Your LCIA that will be the people that they're talking about. The CIA dressed up as Arabs will be letting off this nuclear bomb in America. But I think it's more than that. I think they're taking these nuclear warheads and putting some of them in different parts of Europe. They can't get Europe to agree to go to war with Syria and Iran. And America doesn't want to be the only one fighting them, because it could be, you know, could be literally trigger a revolution in America. So if they can try and get a, like they had in the first Iraq war, Gulf war, where the UN sanctioned it and all this. So I think that those nuclear missiles, some of them are winging their way across to Europe, and they're going to be used in various false flag attacks in Europe. Well, I'm telling you
one thing, brother. If there's one single nuke that goes off in any country of this world, it's World War III. It will be definitely beyond a shadow of a doubt imminent. There will be no ifs, ands, or buts. If anyone out there uses one single nuclear weapon, then it's on. It's going to be on like Donkey Kong. And I'm going to tell you what.
That's the problem. You see, if they put the nuclear devices in the cities in Europe, say they put one in Rome and say one in Paris and one in Dublin and one in maybe some other place, you know what I mean? I mean, as I say, in military terms, Europe is a target-rich environment. I mean, it's pretty easy to put small nuclear bombs to any part of Europe. And they set them off probably either simultaneously or within days of each other. Then they'll have the whole of Europe clamoring to say, oh, we got to go to war with whoever did it. Now, I mean, it'll be the secret services of their countries that'll put the bombs in place. It won't be the Americans. It'll be the Italian secret service, or it'll be the French secret service. You know, they do what they're told. You know, if they're told put a nuke somewhere, they put it, you know. And then what happens? That's the plan. So by exposing the plan, you can defeat the plan. Because if you can expose that this is what they're up to, you know, this is their main line of what they're going for. And one of the reasons I suspect they're going to do it in Dublin is because they're going to have an air show in Dublin on September 15th. What's different about this air show is it's commemorating World War II, the Battle of Britain. Now, Ireland was neutral in the Second World War. We were not on any side. In actual fact, some people were on the side of Germany and some people were on the side of Britain, depending on various factors. So, you know, we were neutral. We were also quite far away from Europe, so it was kind of logical to be neutral. We weren't likely to be invaded by the Germans. In actual fact, we had a bigger risk of being invaded by Britain, because Britain had already just made plans to invade Ireland if they were going to lose British mainland. They were quite prepared to come and invade Ireland and then use it as a base to attack the Germans in England. You know what I mean? So we had some pretty good reasons to kind of like the Germans in those days. You know what I mean? A lot of people think, oh, you shouldn't have liked them. But I mean, you know, as I say, what's the saying? My enemy is your enemy, so we're friends. You know what I mean? You know that expression? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. This whole world has just been upside down for as long as I can remember. I mean, good Lord, man. We've been through all these different world wars and, you know, just they don't call like Vietnam or Korea or Afghanistan or Iraq wars. But anytime somebody's shooting back and forth at each other, to me, that's a war. You know, whatever they want to call them is neither here nor there. They always seem to come up with collateral damage, how they like to say it, you know. But in World War III, we are the collateral damage. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, if they throw all those nukes, it's goodbye Northern Hemisphere. I mean, Northern Hemisphere will have so much radiation, I don't know if life could survive in it. I mean, it's debatable if life can survive in the Southern Hemisphere, but it's pretty certain that nothing will, you know, ultimately survive in the Northern Hemisphere. So I don't think
well, truthfully, Dublin, I question the radioactivity of all nuclear weapons. I know that the instantaneous burst will have a massive amount of radiation, but as far as fallout, nuclear fallout and stuff, I keep going. My mind keeps going back to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and now I notice deal in the chat room about Fukushima. I stood at Ground Zero back in 1984 at Hiroshima and Ground Zero in Nagasaki, and I was told whenever I was going to school back in science class that if an atomic bomb ever went off, it would be anywhere from 100 to 1,000 to 2,000 years before you could ever safely go back in there and stand around. And so with that said, as I'm standing in there and I'm looking at the museum in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, the two, I went to both of them, and I'm standing at the ground zero looking at the twisted metal and the deals where people were actually standing there and they were literally x-rayed to the wall, and basically you could see the outline where somebody used to be, you know, standing. They were basically fried straight to the wall, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, am I going to die because of the radiation around this place? And I look around me, and there's thousands of people walking around as if it's, you know, no big deal. And a lot of the folks that were actually in the deal when it happened, you know, far enough away where the actual blast didn't get them, close enough to where they actually got burns and some of them got blinded by the flash of the deal, but survived to be a ripe old age. And so if you look up a video called Nuclear Scare Scam, and you watch this video and you listen to this guy who was supposedly the head of the safety department down there, and this guy is sitting here talking about he used to swim in the fuel rod pool and drink water out of the thing, and that back then they used to mix this stuff by hand, and it just kind of makes you wonder. You know, I can understand the military's point of view, why they would want everybody to be afraid of nuclear weapons and that kind of stuff, because, you know, of the value of uranium and such, or the military significance of it. But then I watched a deal where down there where Chernobyl was. There's a guy that does this show called Monsters or whatever. He goes out there and fishes, and he catches these big old giant fish. And he actually went into the pool where they, right next to where the reactor exploded in Chernobyl, and was fishing and was pulling fish out that seemed to be perfectly healthy. And so on down the line. So, you know, with that said, I still have questions about whether or not radiation is even dangerous after the fact. You know, I can understand that right there, immediately as soon as the explosion occurs, that there's a massive release of radiation, and if you're anywhere near it, you're toast. But after the dust settles and all that kind of stuff, you know, I still have my reservations about believing as much, being afraid of it, so to speak. But, you know, a full-on nuclear war, 10 and 20 megaton nuclear warheads going off, it'd be so much damage, you wouldn't want to be around after the deal, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm on the same school of thought as you, having seen that video of the guy, the nuclear scare, and that. But the only problem, the big serious problem with all-out nuclear war is these bombs would throw up a lot of dust.
Oh yeah.
The dust alone will affect the climate, probably bring the temperature down for a few years.
Yeah, I believe we'd go into a nuclear winter.
That would be a problem. Plus, a lot of that dust would be radioactive. Whether the radioactive business is that dangerous, is another day's work. But I think I wouldn't like to start putting off 20,000-odd nuclear bombs in the Northern Hemisphere. I mean,
Definitely not.
No, and these are huge bombs. I mean, they make the Nagasaki and the Hiroshima, they were toy bombs.
Yeah, the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs, those were only 500-pound bombs, and they weren't nowhere near what we're talking about now. We're talking 10 and 20 megaton nuclear warheads, some of them with multiple warheads on them, like cluster bombs. And so you get something like that going on, dude, in the laws of physics, you could end up basically igniting the atmosphere if you got too much hydrogen explosions going on around. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Well, a curious thing I ran into about hydrogen bombs is, in actual fact, there's no mathematical limit to the size you can make them. apparently a hydrogen bomb, if you want to make it bigger, you gang together two of them. If you want to make it bigger again, you gang together three or four or five. And apparently there's no mathematical limit. You can build a large enough hydrogen bomb that would blow the planet into two parts. You know what I mean? It's literally that way it works with hydrogen bombs. So my unfortunately, I just don't know enough about the subject to say that nuclear stuff will kill us or not kill us, but I am fairly certain that we would lose, you know, most big cities would be gone, you know, with massive loss of life.
There's there's
Chicago, New York, you know, Toronto.
There's a message
California.
In the
they'd all be gone.
There's a message in the chat room from Tracy Kennedy that says that's ridiculous. They are still having children born with mutations. Well, you know, I don't know. All I can tell everybody is that I literally, physically stood in the center of Japan. All right, and here I am 47 years, this is over 20 some odd years later, and I haven't died from radiation sickness or anything like that. I drank the water over there, I ate the food over there, and I'm still alive. And even after Fukushima, my son, who's over 20 some odd years old, he went over there to Japan with him and his wife. They ate the food, they drank the water, and still today are perfectly fine. Because when my son first told me that he was going to go visit Japan after Fukushima happened, I tried to talk him out of it because I didn't know. And I still don't know the repercussions. But all I can say is that in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there are still people alive who were around during the time when the bomb actually went off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, this is the trouble with radiation. What it requires is there's all different sorts of radiation. And there's alpha particles and beta particles and all this sort of stuff. Now, alpha particles, as far as I gather, you can put them on your skin and they won't do anything to you. But if you ingest them, they'll kill you really quick. But they're quite small. You only need a small amount of alpha particles to enter into you, either through breathing or whatever, to kill you. But because they'll be spread out, you could have 100,000 people in a city like Nagasaki or whatever, and 90,000 or maybe 99,000 will not breathe in the particles that will kill them. So this is where radiation is quite irregular. It's not like, you know, it's for certain if you go into this area full of radiation, it will kill you. It's all, everything in radiation is based on probabilities. You know, like the gamma radiation, you know, the meter goes DDDD.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not trying to diminish in any way the dangers of, you know, nuclear reactors and nuclear missiles and all that kind of stuff. I'm just merely pointing out that, you know, there's some questions there to be asked, because you just can't get the doggone truth from the mainstream media, and sometimes not even from the alternative media, and you definitely can't get the truth from the governments or the militaries of the world. So even with all that, if they start popping off 10 and 20 megaton nuclear warheads, you know, there's going to be a whole lot of people in trouble.
Yeah, I don't dispute that. Bombs alone, without any radiation, are quite capable of doing massive damage. I mean, you don't need radiation thrown into it. In actual fact, Fukushima, in terms of the damage it's done, is actually more dirty in terms of radiation than the equivalent of something like 5,000 nuclear bombs going back. So we've already got on the planet a situation where the equivalent of 5,000 atomic weapons went bang in Fukushima. And it's still pouring out radiation into the Pacific Ocean on a massive scale. And that radiation has worked its way over to California, Alaska, the going round in circles, going down to hit Australia eventually, and then back up again to hit Japan. You know, it's all that big circular current in the Pacific Ocean. So I don't know. I really am not an expert in nuclear. The only thing was that it was very enlightening watching that film, The Nuclear Scare, because it did fit in with a few peculiar things, like the fact that you could walk into Nagasaki and Hiroshima and statistically have a low risk of getting a problem. Do you mean? And
yeah,
how, how can all these people be living in Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Yes, there are some people getting some children born with problems. Do you know what I mean? But there's an awful lot of healthy children being born every day in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Here's my point for even bringing that up was I was told in school, flat out, that it'd be 100 years to 1,000 to 2,000 years before you could ever even go up inside there, you know. And there I was, less than 100 years, standing right there inside there, you know. And so that's where that question came about. But, you know, what it all boils down to, regardless of whatever's going on, with Fukushima, with all the different conflicts in the world, the elite, the representatives of the world, they're doing a crappy job, bro. They're polluting our land. They allow corporations to go into places like Mexico and pollute their water and basically pollute their skies and have them work for slave wages and all that kind of stuff. Third world countries being treated like trash, and some third world countries just flat out being ignored. And now they're fixing to get us into World War III. And it's not we the people that's wanting this stuff. It's the global elite, bankers or whatever, whoever the hell's. There's a saying where I come from. He who has the gold makes the rules. And so essentially that means the rich bastards of the world who's actually getting us into all this mess, they don't give a damn about we the people. They don't give a damn whether people are getting sick in Fukushima because of all the radiation or anything like that. They don't give a damn about Mexico, the rivers being polluted, or people trying to get up out of there because they're being shot up by drug warriors. And they don't give a damn about drone strikes killing babies. You know, it seems to me the only thing they give a damn about is the bottom dollar. And so starting another war is the bottom dollar. If you survive World War III, if you're the global elite and you survive World War III, you come out on the top, you have all the gold. You make all the rules. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely go with that. I mean, I've lived in the third world and I've seen it, and that's definitely the way they... Third world is basically the... It has been destroyed by, deliberately by the methods that we use in Europe and America. I mean, as I try to explain to lots of people, what they do is they go into countries which have, say, copper or iron or whatever it is, and they dig a hole and they pull the stuff out, and there's no control over where the pollution goes. And then they bring this copper and iron or whatever to Europe and America, and then they manufacture it and they sell it back to these countries at whatever, 100 times, 1,000 times more price. And any attempt by these third world countries to sort of say, well, if we make a factory and we use the copper and the iron and we change it into a high-value product, we can sell it to Europe and America. But Europe and America have made these rules that make it impossible for them to export in or whatever, you know. And if there's any sign that they're getting anywhere, like countries like Libya, where they were actually getting places, they simply declare them terrorists and they bomb the crap out of them and, you know, put them out of business.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will. I mean, any country that gets too uppity, they're gone. I mean, that's the way they do it.
Well, and that's, you know, that just drives me insane. That's why I tried to put that deal together for Shout It From a Mountain so that I could get the average Joe to actually have a platform to speak and you know, spread their messages of peace. But a whole lot more than that's got to be done if we're to actually have an opportunity to stop World War III, because like you was talking about earlier, man, false flag events, getting everybody all thinking some terrorist was the one that did it. A lot of the alternative media and researchers, we're not buying it, and so we're keeping our eye on them and keeping their feet to the fire, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take, Thomas Jefferson said it, I believe, the price to freedom is eternal vigilance, and that means basically you better keep your eye on the ball, because the global corrupt bankers, money men of the world are going to do what they want to do, and they're going to lie to you to get whatever they can. And so with that said, if you ain't paying attention to what's going on, if you don't know who it is that you're voting for, then don't vote for them. Unless you know their record, don't put your name on the line and say, yeah, I vote for this senator right here because, you know, he's a Republican, or this one because he's a Democrat or Libertarian. Do some research into who the heck that man is, because that man may be like the man that's up there right now, a piece of trash that has his finger on the button. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, you got one piece of big trash with a big finger and a big button there. I mean, in Ireland, we don't have these kind of problems where they got nuclear bombs which they can push buttons with. But well, we got a lot of trash at the top as well. I mean, we got trash that looks like, if my estimation is correct, they're going to take a large aircraft bigger than jumbo jet, an A380, at the air show on Sunday, September 15th, and they're going to crash it into Dublin City. Then they're going to probably try and blame Syrian or Iranian or whatever for having done this false flag attack by shooting missiles at this plane in an air show. I mean, it's all there. I mean,
well, I understand, and it wouldn't surprise me none in the least, because as I was listening to the Judge Jeanine clip there, and listening to what she had to say, talking about how these terrorists came over and they did 9/11, I still have my questions about 9/11. See, that's the thing. I don't buy the official story of anything.
9/11, I mean, all of the people that they named, Hatta and a whole bunch of the others, were trained in, brought over and kept mostly in army bases in America.
Well,
and apparently Hatta was a Lebanese Secret Service agent working with America.
And that's why I say I don't trust the mainstream story or the government story until I can research all the facts, because the fact is we've been lied to so many damn times it ain't funny. They've been caught red-handed falsifying documents, falsifying records, falsifying news stories. I mean, you can literally go back and watch some of the bloopers that the mainstream media did, where they'll have one reporter in one side of the parking lot and another reporter on the other side of the parking lot, and then they're claiming that they're in two separate places and doing two separate stories, and then you see the same vehicle run through the background of both screens there. So with that said, the trust in the media is zero. The trust in the government is zero. And the trust in any of the international bankers is zero, because here we are, the bankers got paid with the people's money, and then they turned around and repossessed the people's house, so the bankers got paid twice in that whole housing debacle. And it hasn't stopped there. Every single way that they could possibly screw humanity, such as the carbon tax, you know, they're taxing you to breathe, they're taxing your water, they're taxing free energy, they're taxing every damn thing under the sun, and then they're around and using that money that they just took from you via taxes, and going out there blowing up other countries, and they're making millions and billions of dollars on illegal drug trade. They're making millions and billions of dollars off of medical supplies, ammunition. The industrial military complexes of the world are getting filthy, stinking rich, while there's some starving baby sitting in some third world country, and we can't solve that problem after all these freaking years. They're not solving problems. They're creating more problems. And just about the time that we think we're getting something heading in the right direction to solve the problems of the world, they start another conflict and blow somebody else up out of their house. What do you think?
Well, this all goes back to actually about 1750 when the first banking system started up by the Rothschilds. And they got very expert at, you know, giving money, loaning money to two kings, and then giving them enough money to start a war with each other, and then getting them into debt. And so, basically, over time, they got very, very good at creating wars all over Europe. And that was one of the things when the people went to America, the early people were so glad to get out of Europe, because in Europe and most countries at that time, even in Germany, people were slaves. They were officially classed as slaves. And in France, they were basically a third of the population were officially classed as slaves. And the Irish can tell you they were slaves. I mean, you know, they weren't allowed to own any land. They weren't allowed to accumulate. They weren't even allowed to have a horse that was worth more than £5. Do you mean if they owned a horse that was worth more than £5, the landlord could just come up and say the horse is worth £10. They'd say, I'm buying that horse off you for £5, and you have to give me that horse because you're not allowed to own a horse that's worth more than £5. You know what I mean?
Don't you see something wrong with that picture?
Oh yeah, well this is what we. I mean, this is why the Irish fought the British so much. I mean, they controlled our food supply. They controlled every aspect of our life. And because we weren't allowed to own any land, we had to rent it from the landlord. And if the landlord didn't like your face, he could just kick you off the land. Even if you paid the rent up, you know, up to date, he'd just kick you off the land. And then if you were landless, that was usually a death sentence, you know what I mean? And of course, if you got kicked out of your land by one landlord, the other landlords were very unlikely to take you because they would assume, well, you must be a troublemaker, you know what I mean? So, the feudal setup of Europe was how when most people came from Europe to America, they certainly wanted to see the back of that. And, you know, the early start of America, basically, the land was so big that they couldn't really control the people like Europe. And when they got their land and their farm and they're selling their stuff, they invented their own money. And to a large extent, the Americans were kind of out of control from the rest of Europe because it took months for a ship to come and it took months for a ship to go and communications were slow. And gradually, America managed to eventually figure out the name of this game is, kick the bloody European power out, and they kicked the British out, and they advanced from there. But unfortunately, in 1913, they let the Rothschilds and the British Queen and the Dutch Queen and all that get control of the Federal Reserve, and it's been downhill for America ever since. They got America to join the First World War by sinking the Lusitania. That was all deliberately set up so that Lusitania would be seen by a U-boat and deliberately sunk. They deliberately helped in ensuring that Japan attacked America. As far as I can see, they also were provocative enough to make Hitler want to join Japan and say he would be on that side. So America got dragged into the European War. So they're very good at engineering, getting people into wars.
Well, that's all the more
have woken up and they'll kick this trash out, and we will we won't have the war again.
Brother, that's what I was about to say, what you just said. That's all the more reason for we, the people, to keep raising our voices and letting the elite of the world know that we're not going to take this crap anymore, man, because it just continuously goes on.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, when we say the elite, it's the Rockefellers, the Queen of England, the high families of Germany, like the Mercedes and the Baron von Richthofen, and all these people, they own something like 98% of the Federal Reserve. You know what I mean? Yeah. The Federal Reserve is where the money from America comes, so they effectively, they own big chunks of America now. So, I mean, people talk about, well, we shouldn't sell this pig farm business to the Chinese. Well, they probably own, big chunks of the America behind your back because they bought them off the elite who owned them in the first place, I mean, you'd be probably quite surprised how much the Chinese own of America. Probably be, a lot of Europeans would be quite surprised how much the Chinese own of Europe, because behind their backs, the governments of Europe follow the commands from the elite. You know, they say sell British petrol to BP oil to Saudi Arabia. It's a done deal, we don't get told. I mean, who owns BP? British Petroleum, that petrol corporation? I don't know.
Yeah.
It could be, the Queen of England one day, and it could be Rockefeller the next. You don't know who owns these companies. You have no idea who owns half these corporations in America. Microsoft and all that. I mean, nobody knows who owns them except the owners. it's all hidden behind layers of companies and,
With that said, I wanna take a break and play about four separate clips. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about what all these clips have in common.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, here we go.
Gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Were the devil. If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, Our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey. Good day.
Sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery.
Fight for liberty! In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
I'm Erica Lost. NATO forces bombed Serbia and Kosovo. An unidentified man is being held for questioning by the FBI for suspected links to last month's biological virus deaths. In local news, a dog named Hero takes the grand prize at the annual... I wish I could tell you more pertinent news. But we're in a rating system here. And the key factor is...
sensationalism.
They've got you running in circles 9 to 5. Then 5 to 9...
you're mine. I tell you what they want you to know, and you consider it the truth.
Nobody is opening their eyes. Our global economy is depleting the world of our lives and natural resources.
And are you happy? Come on! I work for the system.
Well, if you filled up your gas tank lately, then you don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you gas prices are on the rise. I know.
And at 12:09, welcome back in. The final days of the campaign sometimes can get a little salty.
Well, the final days of the campaign can get a little salty.
The final days of the campaign can get a little salty.
The final days of the campaign can get a little salty.
As you probably noticed, the final days of the campaign have been, well, you might call them just a little salty.
If your email inbox is out of control and you've given up sorting it out, a Baltimore company thinks it has a solution for you. Could this be the end of email overload?
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 Could this be the end to email overload?
Could this be the end of email overload?
Could this be the end of email overload?
And welcome back to the show. I scream, you scream, you know the rest.
I scream, you know the rest.
I scream, you 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 scream, we all know the rest.
I scream, you know the rest.
I scream, you scream, well, you know the rest.
I scream, you know the rest.
I scream, well, you know the rest.
You scream, and you know the rest.
I scream, you know the rest.
I scream, you know the rest.
I scream, and you know the rest.
I scream, you know the rest.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
If you want a vision of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face.
Tonight, Chewing on Free Trade. Tonight, market down, book sales up.
Tonight, award-winning style.
Here's the latest from the City Post News team.
Good evening. Our top story tonight, pitching free trade to Ontario's agriculture industry. Canada's ambassador to the United States, Alan Gottlieb, is in town tonight trying to do just that.
Real people connecting with our audience, drawing from an established nationwide network, all under the Quebecor Media banner. Coast to coast, and as Canadian as you are, Sun News Network, hard news, straight talk, coming soon.
CTV National News with Lloyd Robertson. CTV National News with Lisa Leflamme.
Thanks for being with us. I'm Sandy Rinaldo. We'll be here tomorrow, and of course, we hope you'll tune in.
Welcome to E-Talk. I'm Ben Mulrooney.
Good evening. I'm Gord Martineau.
Welcome to CBC News Toronto. I'm Anne-Marie Medaway.
And I'm Dwight Drummond.
Stephen D'Souza, CBC News Toronto.
I'm Peter Mansbridge. Thanks for watching.
Have you had enough propaganda from the corporate-controlled media? Break free from the mainstream. Join PressForTruth.tv.
Hello everybody, it's old King Shaziz the Terrible and my honorable knight Dublin. Hey Dublin, how you doing, buddy? You still there? I think I might have lost Dublin.
Yeah, I just
had
turned my mic off, that was all.
Okay, so after hearing all them clips, what do you think, man? What's the first thing to come to your mind? What all in common about all that?
I always like your man, but you gotta get mad. You know, he was around in the 70s, I think, you know, and everything he said from that time onwards has been correct. You know, you gotta get out there and you gotta get mad.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I mean, when I was younger in the 70s, I mean, you know, if you were in a shop and, you know, you got annoyed, you'd shout at the guy, you know, like, what's your problem? You know, people would communicate, you know, that they were angry. But nowadays, you know, if you raise your voice, you're liable to get the police coming and battering you, you know. I mean, I was walking down a street in Paris, and, you know, just below Champs-Élysées, and some guy slightly tipped another guy, you know, bender, and your man gets out, and, you know, the two of them were, like, pushing at each other, and then So make sure they get back in their cars and they drive off. But nobody in Paris batted an eyelid. You know, they said, it's just Paris, you know. But you do the same thing in America or in Ireland or in all these globalist run, you know, heavily controlled globalist places, and, you know, they beat you up on the spot. You know, it's, they don't want us to get mad. You know, they want us to take our poison in the water, take our GMOs, sit down in front of the TV and get fat as pigs, and, you know, glorify, you know, knock back some beers while watching missiles, you know, rain down on Iraq, you know, and, you know, we're the good guys, you know, we're bombing the crap out of all these bad guys, you know. Yeah. The good guy and the bad guy story, and it always works.
Well, the biggest...
And one of the things I always try to explain to people, yeah.
The biggest thing that I took out of all those clips that I've heard is that we, the people of the world, have been lied to, manipulated, and in such an extreme fashion that even those folks who are waking up, like, you know, for example, they'll take one specific conspiracy or whatever, and they'll run with it, and they'll think that is the end-all of doomsday scenarios, and they got to get out there, and they got to save the world and all that kind of stuff. My point is, we the people got to step way back, and I mean way back, and we got to look at the overall big picture and see what the heck is going on, because it's so easy to get sucked into the abyss of any media, whether it be alternative media or mainstream media. It's coming to the point where you don't even know who the heck to trust, man. We're breeding a society of chronically paranoid individuals who are afraid to walk out their own dang door because there might be a terrorist hiding behind the bush or somebody's going to mug you down the street. Now, I can go out and I can stand in my front yard, and granted, I'm not in a war zone or anything like that. I can go out and stand in my front yard, and I can listen to all the sounds of nature, and I don't hear bombs going off. I don't see Planet X coming in the sky to blow us up, and I'm not seeing all these doomsdays come to pass. And then when I come inside and I get on the internet or I look at the TV, everything, and I mean everything, is designed to just essentially negative, negative, and more negative. Every time you get on TV, it's all negative, you know. You got smut, you got trash, you got lies and propaganda in all different directions. And the whole damn thing is all, to me, a major divide and conquer slash distraction. You know, watch my left hand while I slap you in the face with my right kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think sometimes we have to try and simplify it for the Joseph. So I always simplify it as best as I can, and I go for, we have to get out of the idea that everything is the good guys fighting the bad guys. We have to realize that it's the bad guys fighting the other bad guys. There are no good guys.
Yeah,
and
well,
we are definitely not the good guys.
The people are caught up in the center.
What?
I said the people are caught up in the center of this fight going on amongst all these global corporations that keep trying to fight for power, you know. When you talk about the Democrats versus the Republican, you're just talking about two sides of the same coin, but two separate corporations that are sitting there fighting amongst each other to see who can get the control of the purse, you know, whoever controls the money. It's back to the he who has the gold makes the rules kind of thing. So all these countries together, all the global elite, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, all of them. If you want to find out who in the hell is responsible for all the ludicrous, the stupidity, the ignorance of the world, follow the money trail, brother.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's always the way, follow the money. But we ourselves, the first thing we have to understand is that everything is painted in a simple picture. You know, here are the Syrians, they're the bad guys. here are the Americans, here are the Europeans, they're the good guys. You know what I mean? So the good guys are going to go over to that part of the world and they're going to hammer the bad guys. Now, what we have to realize is that we're the bad guys. We're just as bad as the Syrians. We're just as bad as the Iranians. We're just as bad as the Iraqis. There are no good guys. You know what I mean?
Well, brother,
in this story.
Brother, I have to disagree on that a little bit because the good guys is the we the people guys, the we the people gals. You know, it's not like you're in Spain right now, all right? And I got friends in Ireland, I got friends in Australia, I got friends in Canada, I got friends in Russia and China and Japan. I got friends all over this globe who would rather get together with me and have a barbecue than they would be for me or my children to come over and kill them or their children. You see what I'm saying? It's not the average Joe doing this kind of crap, but it's going to take the average Joe to stand up and get mad like that guy was talking about and put this doggone heat back on the people who need the heat on them, like the mainstream media and the representatives of the world and the global bankers of the world. We got to literally put the heat on them. Stop feeding the beast that's literally eating us alive. We're getting people born every day that are coming into this system, being dumbed down via the doggone schools. Some folks graduating can't even freaking read a book, man. And then it gets to the point where once these folks get out here and they get in the internet and they start doing research on alternative media, they develop a chronic paranoia. We are turning into a whole bunch of mentally ill, reliant on the government individuals who can't work or think for ourselves. And it's a few of the people out there, alternative researchers, who are trying to make a difference by pointing out, look, you know, you can get a better medicine by going into the alternative medicine world, or you can get alternative energy. There's always another solution to the mainstream deal. But how many of the average Joes out there can even go fishing for themselves, or go gardening for themselves, or whatever, you know, go hunting for themselves? If the system collapses as is, we the people are screwed. What do you think?
When I try to say that we're, you know, there's the bad guys and the bad guys, it's, in some ways, we, the good guys, are contributing to the problem by not standing up and saying, I mean, I'm the first to admit I was guilty of thinking, well, maybe Hussein is a bad guy, maybe the Americans have intelligence on him, you know. Maybe things will be better when, you know, Iraq is freed from the power of Hussein. But that was because I was getting, those days, I was getting most of my information from the media, you know, the third stream media. So I had no other real information. And internet was fairly kind of newish even in 2003, you know, I wasn't using it that much. And then gradually as I started to use more of it, I began to realize, hang on, they pulled a fast one on us.
Yep.
It turned out that they knew all along that Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction, and everybody who knew anything about weapons of mass destruction knew that the weapons that Hussein had, they had a shelf life, and they exceeded their shelf life in the 1996 or 1997, 6 years before they gave us that dog and pony show where the United Nations was running around looking in all its palaces for, so the United Nations was fooling us. So then I began to think, well, if you can't trust the United Nations, and I mean, certainly the media people would know that these weapons would have a shelf life, so they never said anything. So that means that you got the American government, the British government, the media and the all this show going on, not telling us a fraction of the story.
Well, so
that's kind of when I started delving deeper into the subject and began to realize, well, you know, we the good guys, we're just as guilty because we didn't find out in time. We didn't get mad enough in time, you know.
Yeah.
I think something like a million people protested in England against the war, and yet they still went to war in Iraq.
I agree with you that we, the people, are guilty to the extent that we keep feeding the same beast that's eating us alive, and it took us a long time to realize that all these people were lying there out there, you know what, to us. And so with that said, you know, they're all the people who were back there shouting way back when, telling, you know, hey, look, you need to look at this. They were called conspiracy theorists and tinfoil hat wearing nutcases. And here it is today. Now you hear the mainstream media saying, hey, look, the NSA is spying on people. Look, you know, this is going on and that's going on. Now it's different because the mainstream media is saying it. When we were saying it, then we were nutcases. But now that it's actually coming out on the mainstream media, and the news reporters are getting scared because now they know they're being spied on too, and you know, they're seeing that we're on the verge of World War III. You see where I'm coming from, brother? So all the fault can't lay on the people, but with the exception of the fact that we keep feeding the beast financially, we keep feeding the beast with helping spread propaganda and all that kind of stuff. And so that's why I keep saying we all need to step back and look at the big picture, put all the conspiracies on the table, follow the money trail back to where it leads to those folks who are actually in charge of pulling the strings, the ones who are getting the president to do what he does, and the Congress and the senators buying them off and all that kind of stuff. So we got to start following the money trail, and the best way to follow the money trail is to stop feeding the beast. And as soon as their wallets get empty, the one that starts squealing the loudest is the one that did it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think in Dakota they have their own bank, Bank of Dakota or something, like the People's Bank. I think it's those kind of solutions that would work. In Switzerland, they also have something like a People's Bank, except for currency. So they got two currencies in Switzerland. They got the Swiss franc, and they have this other currency, which for the life of me, I can't remember the name of, but it's $6 billion worth of that currency floating around the Swiss system, and it's on equal power. It's about one of these units to one Swiss franc. And so I think by making types of banks that are separate from the main large banks and that are local and with their own currencies, we can break the control of the large banks and the large globalists have over us.
Well,
but we need to go much more local. You know, once anything goes beyond 20 miles, you know, it has more chance of getting loose and running amok.
I agree with you. I agree with you. It has to start on a local level. It has to start with individuals. It has to start with people seriously sending as many emails that they can, as many letters via snail mail, or shouting it from the top of a mountain or whatever you can to get people to understand that we, the people of the world, do not want World War III. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, World War III comes because we have these large groups, these large multinationals, which have more money than most countries, and they've decided it's in their best interest to have if not a war, to suddenly have something like Cold Wars, or, you know, where, you know, the two cowboys are standing face to face with the guns ready to shoot each other while inside a fireworks factory, you know.
Yeah, well,
it's pretty. They're getting down to the wire with this one. I mean, the American defense system is at DEFCON 5, which is halfway up the list. DEFCON 1 being all-out nuclear war.
Well,
the Russian government apparently is already in the bunkers, and because as far as they're concerned, the Americans are nuts, and they're going to start the war.
Well, brother, look.
Not the Americans, not the American people, but
I agree with everything you're saying. I agree with everything you're saying. What I'm saying is, to all the people out there, World War III is coming to your backyard and my backyard, everyone's backyard, and the clock is freaking ticking. And if people don't get up and they don't get up now and start to shout it out loud, I'm gonna tell you what. There ain't going to be nothing pretty after World War III. That's for damn sure. And those folks that are up in their bunker, you know, they're just as screwed as the guys who ain't in the bunker, you know. The ones who get killed in the initial blast will probably be the fortunate ones, because the rest of the people out here, when all the dust settles and the nuclear winter's going on, And it's hard to get food, and everybody's running around like a road warrior society, fighting and killing each other over what natural resources or what kind of supplies each other has. Now, I'm telling you, we are coming down a bad path, and we're worse than Thelma and Louise driving off the cliff. We are the entire world, people driving off the cliff in a freight train together. And if somebody doesn't put on the brakes and stop this thing before it ever even starts, we're screwed. That's all there is to it, plain and simple.
Yeah, it's, I really don't know, because a nuclear war is so beyond anybody's imagination. I have no idea. I mean, I can kind of intellectually grasp the idea, other than, you know, I certainly do agree with you that those who die in the first nuclear bombs will be the lucky ones. And I certainly agree with you. Do these idiots think that they're going to go and into their bunkers and they're going to live for hundreds of years and pop up again in so many hundred years when it's all settled? That ain't going to happen, because they're going to find that the nature of the way the world works is so complex that you need all the specialists, you know, to manage everything. And they can't get enough of the specialists to be down in the bunkers with them. So equipment's going to break down. They're not going to have spare parts. You know, they're just going to get eventually going to die in those stupid tunnels, the same as the people up on top.
Well, not to mention the fact that once they do go inside them bunkers, we the people need to rush over there and concrete them in and keep them there.
Oh, damn right. Find where those bunkers are and make sure they ain't ever going to come out.
Yeah, that's what needs to happen. Because here's the thing, Dublin. Here's the thing. They're gonna turn around. They're gonna start World War III. They're gonna go up into their bunkers, and they're gonna leave we the people out there holding the bag. So when the nuclear bombs go off, it's the average Joe who's getting screwed. It ain't the rich bastard setting up in his multi-billion-dollar bunker with a jacuzzi and caviar and all that kind of stuff. And if you think that this isn't even plausible, that people have bunkers like that, heck, go out and watch the damn Doomsday Prepper show, and you'll see all kinds of people out there buying up old missile silos and turning them into bunkers and all kinds of stuff like that, you know, condominiums under the ground. And if you think the average Joe is doing this, then you got to know that the government has done it as well. They got places for continuity of government for the president, for all the Congress and the Senate, all the representatives that got us into all this mess. They're going to be up in their nifty little bunkers, you know, all nice, warm, and comfy while we're out here suffering through a nuclear winter, and they'll have their military standing at the gate waiting for any of us to come by asking for a piece of bread, and they'll mow us down. And that's what the world's going to turn into. It's going to turn into a road warrior-like society after all this crap goes down, because we're not only looking at World War III, we're looking at civil wars. There's already civil wars going in so many nations it ain't even funny. We're looking at civil wars right in the midst of the United States itself. And so for those folks out there that think it can't happen to you, I'm telling you, go over and bomb Syria right now and watch. When that firecracker's lit and everybody starts escalating, it will continue to escalate. It'll be right in your backyard. And if you don't stop it now, there ain't no stopping it after. And it's too late to cry after the bombs fell. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. The The bunkers the American government would have would be quite sophisticated. I mean, they would be, they drill them with these big nuclear power drilling machines, and I think they're like 70-foot wide tunnels that go down, and then they got within them huge underground places that can house 30,000 people, and like the ceiling is probably several hundred feet high. So we're talking about extremely elaborate underground bases, probably run with nuclear power, probably using thorium nuclear power. Because apparently Kennedy, in the time of Kennedy, they developed thorium power. They sent it down to the Antarctic and set up a base down there using it. Apparently one a drum about the size of, you know, a 200-gallon drum that they put oil in.
Yep.
That nuclear power unit, they fitted it in the Antarctic, and it ran the whole base.
Hey, speaking of oil, yeah. Dublin, let me run something across to you and get your thoughts on this deal. You know there's a big pipeline that runs out of Alaska, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's also other pipelines, but here's the thing that kind of caught my eye while we were listening to all these different things going on in the world. Follow that pipeline. Follow that pipeline to the very end and see where it ends up, because one of the things that that I've noticed with China and Russia and all the different superpowers, you know, United States or whatever, everyone out there seems to be moving resources to specific areas, such as like the Denver airport and China bringing water in out of the Great Lakes, taking it over there, filling up their reservoirs and such, and everyone seems to be moving all their resources, their bunkers and everything to certain areas. And so with that said, where's the safe place to stand after they get everything in place and they start this big old dance we're going to call World War III with one another? Because they're playing a big game. They're playing chess with the world, and we're the pawns. So once the bombs drop, where's the safe place going to be? And whenever it's all over, where's all the resources going to be? You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do. Well, the Russians and the Chinese are of the opinion that nuclear wars are survivable events. They don't take the same view as the Americans and the Europeans. Maybe that's because they haven't been so brainwashed about how bad nuclear stuff is. I don't know, but the Russians and the Chinese have built enough underground bases to house 10% of their population. Now, the 10% of the Chinese population is the same population as America. I mean, 300 million or whatever. So that gives you an idea. The places in the world that might be better off if radiation isn't as bad as we're led to believe would probably be the Southern Hemisphere, South America, you know, parts of Africa. I mean, give you an idea, the Bush family the other day bought 100,000 square miles of Venezuela. You know what I mean? They also, the Bush family, have a large place down in Paraguay. And there's an American army base down there. Its sole purpose is to protect the Bush family's property down there. So that's all the kind of stuff that's going on that the Americans don't know about. Right.
So while the rats are abandoning ship, all right, while they're sending their money off shores, see, here's what when I was talking about following the money, here's what everybody needs to do. They need to find out where all the money's going, where everybody's buying up land, where all the elite of the world, the so-called globalists of the world, where they are buying up land and resources at, and if you find the luxury resort where they're all residing during World War III, then you'll know, who's guilty. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is, what's very interesting about the country Paraguay in South America is, if you look up the oil exports of Paraguay, which is very unusual. The oil exports from Paraguay are zero. They don't export one barrel of oil, right? Now, I happen to know from oil drilling sources that no matter where you drill for oil in Paraguay, you hit oil. It's probably got as much oil as the whole of Saudi Arabia put together. But because the Bush family and very high up Americans, the Rockefeller families, went into Paraguay and bought up large parts of it and basically own and control the government and keep it poor, except for the government people that they control. Anybody who drills for oil in Paraguay, they inevitably find that the oil companies come along and they hand them a load of money and say, you never found oil, now get lost. Because they don't want the pristine Paraguay that they own and control to have any oil in it mucking up the place and causing pollution. It's going to be pristine, lovely Paraguay owned and controlled by the American elite.
Well, here's another thing to point out,
Doug. The American army there to help them.
Here's another thing to point out. There is a Texas oil billionaire who, instead of buying up land for oil, has been buying up land for water. And we had kind of a discussion about this yesterday about how a bottle of water will cost you the equivalence of more than a bottle of petrol, you know. So water has become more expensive than fuel. They call it the next blue gold.
I mean, the elite are probably sitting on technology which makes cars run on water. So they know sooner or later that dam is going to break. Somebody like a Chaziz or some backyard guy tinkering around is going to invent the thing that runs, you know, everything for nothing. And so oil will lose value rapidly. So it doesn't surprise me that somebody in oil would be changing the water. Water might be how we'll fuel our cars. The few cars that did run on water that we know about, like what's his name in America? Myers, I think was his name.
Yeah, Stan Myers.
Stan Myers. You know, it looks like you get about 200 miles per gallon when you're running water, based on... There's a guy in Singapore, a guy called Dingle. I think he died recently. He's been running his car on water for donkey's years. And the figures he gives, he says, 1 hour of driving is 1 liter. So that's working out roughly about, if we assume he's doing 50 mile an hour, that's working out about 200 miles a gallon. So from different sources of people who seem to genuinely build cars that run on water, 200 miles per gallon is what it's looking like with water. So, yeah, I can see why they're investing in water. They know this technology exists. They've probably got patents to it. They're suppressing it. And they're making sure that nobody else can get out there and sell it.
Well, I agree with
you. What you're doing is different. If you get it, you can give it away, which is great. If I get it, I give it away. You know what I mean?
And on the water subject, there's one other. On the water subject, there's one other thing to point out. Now, when you step back and you look at the big picture, have you looked at all the sinkholes coming around the world, all over the world?
Oh yeah, but the trouble is, you don't know if there might have been sinkholes before. Before we had the internet, we didn't know about sinkholes.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Our new invention because of the internet.
I understand what you're saying, but my question is this. All right, now if a person is tapping into the water table and they start pumping out a lot of water in all different areas of the world to send it off into one specific reservoir or several reservoirs wherever, let's say maybe the global elite might be standing or whatever. Well, if you start pumping out all the water tables, that water pressure that's underneath that water table is what actually holds up a lot of the land that you would see sinkholes in if you pumped it dry. You see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah. Well, they've known about this problem in South Africa for many years, because in South Africa they've built gold mines since about 1900, and they've been burrowing left, right, and center. I mean, it's like a, I don't know, it's like a huge underground complex of tunnels and stuff in South Africa. And whenever they come to water, water, of course, gets in their way, they pump it out. But one of the side effects of pumping the water out is it holds the land up above it. So all over Johannesburg City, which is a big city, sinkholes have been opening for donkey's years. You know, whole houses have sort of gone bloop in the night and gone under, families and all.
That's my point. My point is...
it's a well-known problem that if you pump the water out, that the land above can sometimes collapse in a sinkhole.
Yeah, that's my point.
I mean, that's been going on since the 30s, the 40s, the 60s. You know, it's still going on in Johannesburg. Every now and then, a chunk of the city just goes bloop into a sinkhole.
Between the undermining and between the oil well pumping and between the water pumping, you know, you're pumping out oil from wells, you're pumping out water from water tables, and so on and so forth. And so you don't know that part of that water table might be underneath your house. And if some company down the street is pumping that thing dry all the time instead of letting nature fill it back up and keeping an equal balance going on, eventually your house starts to sink.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can get subsidence, which is worse because your house starts cracking up.
Yeah.
You know I mean, and you don't know who to blame, you know, like, and the insurance companies as well, as an act of God, you know, take the hike, not to do with us.
Oh, yeah, that's...
subsidence and sinkholes have been going on for donkeys here. I just don't know if there's more of them than there was before, it's a more unusual event. I'm the jury's out in it, because I don't have enough time to study that. But I can tell you that there are lots of people doing all sorts of things that can devalue your property overnight. All sorts of weird and wonderful things. I mean, if they put a mobile mast beside your house, lots of people won't buy the house because you're being irradiated by the beams of the mast. If you put a big electric pylon going over your land, lots of people won't want to buy land because it's now been irradiated by the magnetic field. If you put a big windmill beside your house to generate electricity, the noise from it, that can, you know, devalue your property. There's a lot of ways people can devalue your property, and there's very little you can do about it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, when they're going out and they're doing fracking and they're using chemicals to bust up the ground to get natural gas or oil out there, and then that seeps into people's wells and drinking water, that's not of any benefit. When they're going out there pumping water tables dry and creating sinkholes and stuff like that, that's not benefiting the people anyway. And things like the Gulf oil spill and Fukushima and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking out at the world. I'm standing back. I'm looking at the big picture. And they're polluting every doggone thing under the sun. And then trying to get us into World War III at the same damn time. So, you know, where's the tipping point when nature finally gets pissed off and says, look, I've had it with these people. Nature's just going to wipe us off like a bad set of fleas if we don't wipe ourselves off first. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what level it becomes a problem. See, the globalists have a religion. They believe the world is overpopulated, and it's overpopulated with the wrong type of people, e.g. Christians and, you know, people who are God-fearing people. And they're not God-fearing people. They're all Satanists. So as far as they're concerned, they're doing Mother Nature, because one of their gods is Mother Nature. And they're doing Mother Nature a favor by exterminating 90% of the world population. And one of the ways they do that is making everything polluted as they can possibly make it. I mean, the Gulf oil spill is a classic example. They knew that the oil spill, the nature in the Gulf has adapted to eating oil because it's seeping out of the ocean floor all the time. So nature in the Gulf has adapted and eats up all the oil. So what they did was they sprayed it with that toxic material.
Chlorite.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredibly toxic. So now nature can't eat up the oil. But worse, it makes the oil sink to the ocean bottom.
Yep.
And the oil that came out from the oil spill, although you don't see it, it's all gone to the ocean bottom of the Gulf. And nature can't eat it up. So it's rolling along the Gulf floor all the time, killing life down there. And because it's incredibly toxic, it's killing all the fish that are down there and everything. So there's a whole disaster unfolding beneath the Gulf floor that most people don't know about. And that's going to take decades to figure out how to solve that problem. I mean, they'll probably have to get ships and stick big vacuums down and suck up all the oil to clear as much as they can in the end, because I can't see any other way, because nature can't eat that toxic stuff, and because the nature can't eat the chlorite, it can't get at the oil to eat up the oil. So, but that was all done on purpose. The big oil companies knew that, and they wanted to make the biggest disaster they possibly could, kill as many million dolphins as they possibly could. You know, I mean, they're maniacs. They're completely maniacs.
Well, you know something, Dublin, I have to agree with you, because it's like this, man. You know, if you're in charge, if you're the representation of the world, only one of two things could be possible. You're either flat out stupid and incompetent and don't know what the hell you're doing to begin with and causing a hell of a calamity for all the people of the world, or you're doing it intentional. And my reasoning leans towards it being done intentional, because I can't see anybody being that damn stupid and being so filthy, stinking rich. When's the last time you ever seen a congressman or a senator come out of being a congressman and senator without being filthy, stinking rich?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all politicians in Europe are very rich. Our president gets paid more than your president. I mean, that gives you an idea how rich politicians are. We only got 5 million people and you got 300 million and our president gets paid more than your president. It's intentional. You know, if you said to me 10 years ago, I'd have said, I don't know. Or I might have said, nah, it couldn't possibly be. But having studied the subject and gone over all the literature that's available on the internet, you know, away from mainstream media, it becomes very clear to you very quickly that, yeah, it's entirely 100% intentional.
Well, proof is in the pudding, brother. All you got to do is watch with your own two eyes and listen with your own two ears. Step back and listen to every side of the story, and you see, this can't be an accident. It just has to be freaking intentional, because just something as simple as the health care that they forced on Americans. Everybody said they didn't want it, and they still did it anyway. Everybody's saying we don't want World War III, and they're still doing it anyway. They're talking about, you know, bypassing Congress and going ahead and doing it any damn way. And so when it's all said and done, when the stuff hits the fan, so to speak, it ain't going to be the global elite who pay the price. It comes down, the credit card bill falls on the back of the people of the world.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the worst thing about it is you can actually trace the whole malarkey back to, well, I mean, before even 1948, there was always this kind of idea that the world was overpopulated. But in 1948, after the end of the world, the British conducted a special paper on world population in 1948. And from there, they made the decision that what they would do is they would deliberately, in the third world, make large cities expand and so that people would not have enough resources and create lots of pollution, so that eventually people would say, oh, the world is overpopulated, and agree with them that, you know, we got to exterminate X amount of people because the world's overpopulated. What's actually happened that hasn't helped them has been the fact that modern technology came along and produced much more food than was anticipated, much more resources than was anticipated. And so, although things are bad in some third world sectors, on average, most of the world is pretty okay. And that has not suited their plan at all. And then what really didn't help them was the invention of the internet, where you and me could talk to each other over the, you know, for hours on end. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, 20 years old, it cost, I don't know, $5 a minute to call America. So you couldn't pick up the phone and talk to America for nothing like you can do today, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing, man.
That's huge changes. I mean, huge changes. So, as I always say to people, there's twice as many people in the world than when I was born, and the world is four times better. So I say, roll on. 10 times more people, you know. I can't imagine how good the world would be. We'd be shooting up to Jupiter for the weekend, or, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Well, one of the things...
We should be doing that kind of stuff now, but they suppressed all the technology.
One of the things that comes to mind after listening to all you just said and everything is the fact that we, the people out here, it's mind-boggling to me. I lost my freaking train of thought. This is just so freaking ludicrous. Because all the people out there, they don't think, they say, well, why would our government do this? Why would any government do this? Why would they want to depopulate the planet? Why would they want to do any of this kind of stuff? It all comes down to one simple point, man. Money. The almighty dollar, the gold, the silver, it comes down to power, it comes down to money, and there are reasons behind why people are still sick. There's reasons behind why that we are still in wars, because wars make money. The military-industrial complex, they sell guns, they sell ammunition, they sell freaking drugs, they sell medicine. I mean, they're making money hand over fist as long as they can keep we, the people, going over killing each other, because they've already convinced each and every one of us that it's our patriotic duty to kill the bad guy from a foreign nation. So we send our children under our patriotic thoughts over to a foreign nation to kill other people's children who look at us as the bad guys as well, and who are sending theirs over to kill our children. So vice versa, they're continuously keeping the whole divide and conquer thing going, so that the wars and the death and the destruction and the disease continues. It's all down to money. It's all down to who has the gold, who has the power. They're playing a freaking literal game of chess with the people of the freaking world. And now that we do have access to the internet and knowledge and information that we can share with one another, it's about time. And I'm telling you, we're running out of time. The clock is ticking. If people don't start getting up and they don't start voicing their opinions, you know, step back from your conspiracy theory. Step back from your Fukushima disaster, or your Planet X disaster, or your meteor disaster, or the pole shift disaster. Step back, way back, look at the entire big picture of all that's going on in the world, and understand that each and every one of us are in the same damn boat. If World War III starts, we're all freaking screwed. It's not just you or this guy, it's everybody. Everybody's screwed. So right now, we have a responsibility to the children of the future to stand up and voice the rights and the wrongs of this world and make something happen, because if we don't, brother, what's coming down the road right now towards us, and we are heading towards it. We got both feet on the gas pedal. We, the people of the world, are riding this rock through space, and we're heading right straight for the wall.
Yes, unfortunately, that's where it's at. I mean, right now, There's nothing more important than the fact that these guys got their fingers on the button and they can push them, be it today, tomorrow, next week. Everything else is kind of sideshow, you know. Whether the dollar goes belly up tomorrow is a sideshow. You know, it's unfortunately, I just don't know. I mean, not being in America or not being in Russia where the guys have got the fingers on the buttons, I don't really know what we can do so much. I mean, the British could do something because they got some nukes that would be fired as well.
I saw a funny Tarzan movie. Did you ever watch any of the old Tarzan episodes?
Oh, years ago, yeah.
Well, there's one particular episode where they gave a monkey a gun.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a good? Do you think that was a good choice?
Well, it must have been fun if you were not shut by the problem.
Well, essentially, we the people of the world gave a whole bunch of monkeys some guns.
Big guns, I can tell you. Big guns. I really don't know because, I mean. The trouble is, the Russians, although they're slightly better, they're not much better. I mean, Putin was saying, you know, basically at the end of the day, you know, let's America and USA get together and let's wipe out the Muslims, you know. I'm thinking, well, that's a bit, you know, drastic because I know a lot of Muslims and there's nothing wrong with them. They're okay people. You know, I certainly would object to anybody deciding, well, let's get together and wipe out all the Europeans. You know?
I was listening to a show yesterday, and they were talking about how religions of the world had been hijacked by, extremists all over the place. And so, if you start talking about religion, then that's a filthy word in the world today. Religion's a filthy word. But if you go down to the basics of every single religion out there and the initial teachings of all the prophets from each of these religions, they were all talking about peace and love and respecting one another, and then now it's all been turned into, you know, you got to kill the infidel, strap a bomb to your back, and all this kind of crap, you know. Well, dude, that the clip that I played of Paul Harvey about Paul Harvey talking about if I were the devil, he's got a point, man. Yeah, if you want to basically destroy the world, just keep on doing what you're doing.
Oh yeah, well I mean this is the thing that people don't understand. Like in places like Syria, for example. These protesters who were driving around in tanks and with heavily armed machine guns and anti-aircraft missiles and everything, they're called protesters by American mainstream media. When they go into towns and villages they've captured in Syria, they're exterminating Muslims from a different type of sect, they're exterminating Christians, they're exterminating soldiers, they're the only people they're not exterminating are from the weird and wonderful type of Muslims that they are, which are the the Wajiba, something like that. They're basically a peculiar sect from Saudi Arabia. We're not getting the full story of what's going on in these parts of the world. That the Americans are financing this bunch of lunatic fringe Muslims, and they know full well that they're killing run-of-the-mill Muslims, and they're killing Christians and run-of-the-mill Josephs.
I gotta point something out, man, because we keep falling into this same thing. When you say like Americans are funding all these deals, and it's the equivalent of people saying all Muslims are bad because of whatever, you know, it's not we the people of America who want this crap. It's the governments, the damn the supposed elected officials and the corporations who are doing this crap. So if a person was to say, it's the American corporation and the American government, I'm right behind you all the way. But I know that my neighbors down the street, they don't want to go over there and bomb these people. And I know that your neighbors down the street from you don't want to come over and bomb us, vice versa. And all these countries have said the same thing. I've heard people in Iran tell people in Israel that they love them, for Pete's sake. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, look, there are Jewish people that live in Iran, and they're respectable members of society, and they move around Iran, and there's nobody attacking them or killing them. I mean, well, you know, the media tries, this is what I'm saying, the good guys, bad guys story. Now, the fact is, as you say, it's not the American people. When I say the term Americans, I should qualify it by saying the globalists who control the American government, the federal USA government, not even the state-level American government, but the federal. And, I mean, Obama, they've actually got all the information to show that Obama paid $8 billion and gave it to the extremists in Egypt as part of the package of stirring up all sorts of terrorism.
Of course he did. Of course he did, because they're his friends. Now, there was a video that came out. I got to get this video out there somehow, that came out right before the election. And it was where the peaceful side of the Muslim community were trying to say that we're not part of this this other side. And they pointed out in this doggone deal that the radical Muslims would literally have their flag hanging over the White House at some point in time. And that was their ultimate goal. And by God, you know, whether you believe in conspiracy theories or not, Barack Hussein Obama, his original name, Barry Satorl, so here you got a president who is going under a new name, excuse me, you can't deny a Muslim background when the guy is going by Barack Hussein Obama. Barack is the horse that supposedly came down from heaven with the Prophet Muhammad on its back. And so with that said, the guy's a damn Muslim. There's pictures of him from Muslim schools. He went to school in Indonesia. His birth certificate was all freaking forged, bogus, the whole damn thing from start to finish is questionable. And so with that said, we got a damn Manchurian candidate in our White House. This guy doesn't represent the American people. The American people got sucked into the hope and dream and the change and all this kind of stuff, because the average American person believes in peace and love and harmony and wants peace in the world and wants the hungry fed and all that kind of stuff. The White House in the District of Columbia isn't even part of the United States. It's its own entity alone, has its own set of laws and everything. The Federal Reserve isn't part of the United States. It's owned by international bankers. So with all that said, the president with a going by the name Barack Hussein Obama, they went over and mopped Saddam Hussein. Now you got a man named Barack Hussein that's going over there trying to mop everybody else. He sent the military into Libya. He sent the military all over the place. They're still in Iraq. They're still in Afghanistan. They went into freaking Pakistan and supposedly got Osama bin Laden. They've done all these kind of things. Allowed some of our representatives in Benghazi to get murdered. They've done all these atrocities under the guise of peace. And here's a guy who got the Nobel Peace Prize, and it's just crazy. It's just flat out crazy, and it's not the American people. I can tell you right now, if you're in Russia, if you're in China, if you're in Japan, or Canada, or anywhere in the world, Pakistan, Iran, Israel, we the people, we want to get along with each and every one of you. These damn supposed congressmen and senators who go in there and get bought and sold on a daily basis, who are literally voting in all the crap that we totally disagree with, are the ones that need to be sitting so far up underneath the jail they'll be speaking freaking Chinese. What do you think, man?
Well, yeah, it's, Hussein, he's definitely some sort of Manchurian candidate. I mean, he goes over to Egypt and he addresses the parliament there in speaks perfect bloody Arabic. You know what I mean? So he's definitely some sort of Manchurian candidate. He addresses the parliaments in the Arabic countries and more or less says, "I'm one of you guys," meaning, you know, he doesn't quite come out and say, "I'm a Muslim." But
yeah, wink, wink, and a nod, nod kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so, here's the thing, brother. You know, this guy's a sheep and we're wolf's clothes because he's literally saying, on one hand, we got to save the children. We got to go in and bomb Syria because we got to save the children. Okay, how many of them bombs are actually going to kill the children? And while he's doing that over there and sending drone strikes over on the other side of the world and doing all this kind of stuff there and even allowing children in this nation to suffer and even allowing children in third world countries to suffer, here's the guy who says, save the children, while he's bombing the children.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's a picture in Facebook I saw the other day with one of those $1 billion B-2 bombers, and it said, it takes a $1 billion airplane dropping a $50,000 bomb to take out a $1 tent in the desert. You know, that's what's going on, you know.
Oh, I believe it.
The craziness of what's going on is beyond... but the problem is, it's not just America. I mean, if it was just America, you might be able to solve the problem. I mean, it's all over. Most of Europe is in on this act. I mean, they might say, oh, we don't want to be part of it, but they do because they sell arms and they sell weapons.
Oh, yeah. Hand over fist, man.
30% of their economy.
All the old supplies, if you notice that, like, we got the best of all the military equipment, and then all the old supplies get sent off to these supposed terrorists who we were supposedly fighting against, over in Libya, whenever there are these behind-the-scenes arms trades and all these kind of things going on, and they're telling you, oh, well, these guys are bad guys, we got to go over and bomb the crap out of them. But then underneath the table, they're handing them guns and ammunition. Does anybody not get it?
Oh, yeah, well, it's like Hussein. Hussein had all these, weapons of mass destruction. And they tried to make out that Hussein had enough intelligent people that they were building it themselves. Huh. But eventually it was discovered that Hussein imported all of it from America. All the weapons of mass destruction came with a made-in-America powder casing. And that was why when they went into Iraq and they went looking for the weapons of mass destruction, they were trying to find them because they didn't want the evidence of the fact that they were all made in America coming out. But I did hear one thing that they did find one weapon of mass destruction in Iraq. They found warehouses full of American dollars, $100 bills. You know, if you can imagine a warehouse where you put in jumbo jets, yeah?
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. And the biggest weapon of mass destruction. Hold on a second.
You're a good country with good technology. You can make plates and you can make perfect dollar.
Oh, yeah, but listen, here's a point to be made, brother. The biggest weapon of mass destruction is the mainstream media and the damn TV set, because they're convincing the world that we got to go over and do all this crap, and it's a crock.
Oh, yeah, well, luckily, I don't know what's going on in America, but a lot of soldiers are saying it's a crock, and they're saying, you know, we did not join the American army to go over to fight Syria on the side of the Al-Qaeda. And that's very interesting. That's a very new and very interesting phenomena. That the, you know, basically they're defying the so-called military leader. You see, in actual fact, in the Constitution, as far as I gather, Obama is not the head of the American army until there is a war. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's why That's why he's attempting to keep himself. That's why he's attempting to keep himself into a perpetual state of war, so that he can literally become a damn dictator.
Yeah, this is it. But it's only in war that the president becomes the chief and commander. The rest of the time, then, is actually the military are the making all the decisions, and the president's got nothing to do with it. So that's the way it should go in theory. So by keeping America in some sort of perpetual state of war, then yeah, he could be abusing his position. But I'm not sure, I mean, I don't know exactly what the definitions of war would be, because they're not quite at war with Syria yet, so...
My definition of war is if two people are shooting each other, there's a war going on. And he's supposed to go before Congress and declare an act of war if he's going to attack a nation, and it has to be under the national security that we're in imminent threat. And Congress sitting on their butts not doing a damn thing about it, because Congress has the power of the purse. Congress could stop funding all this crap and say, look, you know, you're not getting a damn dime from us. You're going to come before us, and you're going to convince us that we have to be there for national security. Otherwise, you're not getting a penny. Try to move your tanks without no fuel. You see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah, well, that could explain why they took the nuclear missile out of the American base the other day. And then you got that Senator Graham in South Carolina saying, it's imminent that they're going to, the Al-Qaeda's got atomic bombs and they're going to let them off in South Carolina. I mean, it's crock. I mean, if you knew how difficult it was to build nuclear bombs, you know, unless you're seriously quite a wealthy and quite a big country, you can forget it. It's not a runner. And so there's no real evidence that Iran has succeeded in building even one atomic bomb, and there's certainly no evidence that Syrians were anywhere near remotely possible to build it, because they're too small a country. Israel built 400 nuclear bombs, but that was because the Americans supplied all the equipment. America supplied all the technology, the equipment, you name it. Even the French, when they were building the hydrogen bomb, were finding it was crippling them. So the Americans had to come over and say, well, we can't tell you exactly how to build a nuclear hydrogen bomb, but ask us 10 questions and we'll answer them.
Well,
and basically, the hydrogen bomb was built by miniaturization and reflector.
Dublin, with that said,
build a hydrogen bomb.
Going back and stepping back and looking at the big picture of the whole thing brings me back to my point about the whole video called the nuclear scare scam. If you want to keep people under the guise that this stuff is so dangerous and so deadly that you can't touch it, that's the best way to keep everybody from building these kind of things, because they know that it's too dangerous to handle, and so your average Joe should not be, according to their own rules, should not be able to go in there and get these materials and build these bombs. So they should be like dropping dead because they got this stuff in their hands before they ever even get to ignite the damn bomb, because they don't have the technology and the skills and everything to actually put it together. They should blow themselves up before they ever even get the thing out into public. So somebody up here is not being up front. Somebody's not telling the truth, period.
Yeah. This is the problem. We're just the Josephs at the bottom. I mean, I never knew that, you know, weapons of mass destruction, bioweapons had a limited lifespan. You know, so I had no idea that the Americans were lying when they went in and invaded Kuwait in Iraq in 2003. They were lying to their teeth, or the American government, I should say, invaded. Now, what do you call it? We learn as we go along. Like I go on the internet and I'm shown that I can build, or it's technically possible to build sarin gas with four chemicals that you buy from the local hardware shop. You learn all sorts of weird stuff on the internet. So apparently sarin gas is not a big deal. You don't need to be a government to Bill, that there was a sarin gas attack in Japan and the underground network in the 80s, I think, you know, quite a few thousand people got injured.
Well, brother, have you ever seen the Anarchist Cookbook?
Yeah, I've seen that one as well. They explain quite a lot of stuff as well.
You can build freaking bombs with household chemicals, Drano and freaking aluminum foil, for Pete's sake. You can build dry ice bombs. There's all kinds of ways to build bombs. Everything's a freaking weapon if you use it improperly. And so with that said, all the fear of everything out there, the terrorists going to jump out, they're going to nuke us, they're going to freaking poison us with everything under the damn sun, does nothing more than scare the crap out of people, make them believe that we got to go over to a foreign land and we got to bomb the crap out of them. And so these lying bastards, I mean, if everybody has a stick and it's got a point on it, you can go over and you can kill people. You see what I'm saying? These lying bastards are keeping everybody of the world all scared, putting all the propaganda, all this crazy stuff out here to keep the pot stirred, whites against black, Muslims against Christians, so on and so forth, the whole divide and conquer thing straight down the damn middle in order to keep us distracted while they go over there and they fatten their wallets, make billions and trillions of dollars stealing money via taxes, stealing money via carbon taxes, stealing money via the health system. They are literally raping the planet. They are raping the freaking planet, and we the people are the ones footing the damn bill. And they're going to continue to rape the planet until the people of the world stand up and stop putting your damn dollar into Walmart, Kmart, and all the different major corporations of the world, until you start buying food from the farmer direct, or until you start buying food or whatever from all the individuals who are actually out there producing the stuff. Cut out the middleman, cut out the corporations, and I guarantee you, when you hit them in the wallet, that's the whole key. You got to hit these bastards in the wallet. You got to hit the congressmen's in the wallet. Have class action lawsuits all over the world against every single representative of the world for breach of contract, for violating their oaths of office, for treason, everything under the damn sun. Because if you don't do it now, when World War III starts, it's too freaking late to go before the judge and say, look, I've been done wrong and I want compensation. You're not going to get no compensation. What you're going to get is a bomb in your freaking backyard if you don't speak up now. That's the whole key to this whole damn thing, man. You got to hit them in the freaking wallet.
Yeah, if we can find ways of stop feeding the monster, then I mean, ultimately, when this mess is over, assuming that we don't blow the planet to bits, if we do succeed against them, the new world will be quite different. It'll be much more local. I mean, you'll generally shop locally, you'll generally get stuff locally. I mean, they've got these new machines now, and they can print out metal parts, right? They literally, what they do is the metal is in powder form, and as it comes out the printer, it's zapped by a laser. And so they can build a part, quite elaborate parts. So NASA's even building rocket engines using this system. They call it sintered metal. Why would you order a part from one end of the country to the other when you know, a guy down the road can have one of these machines, and you go down and you say, here's the computer-aided design diagram of parts that I want, and he makes it, and then, you know, you've got the parts for your car a couple of hours later.
And that guy down the street, Dublin, that guy down the street's going to do a good job. You know why that guy down the street's going to do a good job?
Yeah, he's face to face. He doesn't
want
to do a bad job.
Yeah, he's going to do a good job because he's going to lose his customers if he don't. and you take out the middleman like Monsanto, you buy directly from the farmer. There's no reason for the farmer to buy seeds from Monsanto or genetically altered crap. You know, he can grow natural stuff and save his own seeds and regrow in the next season and whatever. You buy directly from the farmer. The farmer benefits. He can work and work harder because now he's making more money and it's profitable to him. But as long as the corporations have their finger in the farmer's pocket, then that's what's going on.
Oh, yeah, you see, I mean, there's one guy I remember listening on the program on the internet, and he's a farmer, and he has 2.5 acres, you know, pretty close to a big city in America, and he makes $200,000 a year gross from this farm. Because he's got a 1/2 acre of greenhouses, which can, you know, means that he can get stuff growing. And he says, yeah, the first few years it's very labor intensive without much profit. But then he says, after that, then you've got all your stuff and you're not using any chemicals, you're not spending money on that, you're not using big machines, no big tractors, no big heavy equipment, you know, a couple of small machines, a small rotavator. So, and then you're close to the city, and people get to know that you're doing high-quality, GMO-free, fertilizer-free, no-chemical type food. And so the word gets around, and everybody comes around and starts buying off you. And so even today, right now, I mean, I think you'd probably have to have normally about a 40 or 50-acre farm with normal practice to make $200,000, you know what I mean, in a year. So, because you're buying all the big tractors to do all the work, you're paying back the bank on all the interest and the loans, and, you know, you're buying all the seeds and all that sort of carry on. So this guy with 2.5 acres is making as much as farmers for probably 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 acres, depending on the part of the world they're in. So yeah, I think we're going to move much more back to local purchasing for 90% of what we need. You know, our food, our clothes, our, you know, our cars, our, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And that's what it needs to be. We need to take some advice from the Amish and kind of look how they have their society. They trade amongst each other. They trade locally. And they do just fine. But, you know, until the people of the world realize that we, the people, really do have the power, if you ain't spending their funny money at their businesses, then they're not getting rich. If you're not going to their fuel stations, buying up their fuel, then they're not getting rich. You watch the fuel prices. Every single time the fuel prices skyrocket, people can't afford to buy it, so they stop buying it, and the prices come back down. It's supply and demand, and until people understand that when you go to the store, if you feed that store money, you feed that corporation money, and that corporation is part of the system that is the beast that's eating you alive. And so, with that said, instead of going to Walmart, go down and buy a shirt from the Amish, or go buy something from your local dealer or something like that. Go directly to the factory and buy it. And then you'll see a difference in the way that the corporations run business, because once their wallet begins to get thin and their system begins to collapse on them because they ain't got no money coming in, then you'll see the difference. You'll see the power. The people have the power. And until they realize that, then this whole damn thing, everything we've been talking about, will continue to deteriorate. And these global elite bastards, the supposed representatives of every single nation, will continue to make decisions that are contrary to public opinion. They're going to continue to do things that the people keep saying we do not want. They're going to do it whether you like it or not, because they have the money to do so. They have the power. They have the gold. They make the rules. And until you take that gold out of their pocket, they're going to continue to do the same damn thing.
Well, I would go one step further. Is if you decide that gold has no value, you make it a monetary system that's not gold-based, then they lose their power. Because they only get their power from the fact that you and me will accept that gold has a value. Now, if you decide, well, the trouble with gold is they have it all, and they're making me and you and everybody else do things that are bad for us, the only solution is to make it that, you know, we the people decide that gold has no value. It's a useless material. It's like, I don't know.
Well, you got a really good point, Dublin, on the gold situation.
I don't know.
If you start, because a lot of the major corporations and a lot of the global elites, they like to buy gold and they actually raise and lower the price of gold and silver, you know, via the supply and demand. So they manipulate the prices of gold and silver all the freaking time. But they put the majority of their funds back in gold and silver, hard assets like oil and water and stuff like that, because they know that if the the monetary system collapses, the dollar bill won't be worth nothing. But if they got gold and silver has stood the test of time. Water has stood the test of time. Fuels and all resources have stood the test of time. So they're putting all their money in hard assets while they're having everybody else out here use funny money. And when the funny money crashes, guess what? They're still on top. So take away the value of the funny money. Take away the value of the gold and start bartering and trading amongst each other. And when they start having to drop the prices of gold down because ain't nobody buying their gold, ain't nobody buying their silver, ain't nobody buying their products, and they start end up with warehouses full of stuff, you'll watch the price of everything drop to the dirt, man. And you'll watch the stock market crash at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, the stock market's rigged. I mean, the idea that a stock is $10 one day is based on the value of the company is absolute crap. It's turned out that what actually happens is the big elite say, okay, we're going to put out these shares at $10, and you know we're going to get all these big companies to buy them at $10 and sell them at $10, and they buy them, sell them at $10, so the price kickstarts at $10, and then they wait for the rest of the market to say, oh, those shares are worth $10, I'll buy some. But it's not based on any logic. You know, they pull the number out of their behind, as they say. You know, they just say, we're going to make those shares $10. The new company is going to launch them. The shares are $10. And they manipulate the market. And then what they do is they push the prices up and they push the prices down. When they push the price up, they know when it's going to go down. And they bet when it goes down. And they're able to push it down. And then they're able to win on the bet that it went down. Then they offload, and then it'll go back up. And then they buy on the way up. And then they sell when it's at the top, and they push it back down and bet it's going to go down. So they're always winning. So, I mean, I define the stock market as walking into a casino where, you know, they own everything. They you put your money on a black, they spin the wheel, and all the things on the wheel are red. So you think, oh, well, no brainer. Next time I'll spin for the red. Next, they spin it again, and all the things on the roulette wheel are black. They got some panel there, and they can flip-flop between any color they want.
Yep. Hey, Dublin.
And they said, well, it's our casino. We can invent the rules as we go along. You know?
Do you know that? Are you familiar? Are you familiar with the game Monopoly?
Yeah, well, that's another one of those, yeah.
Well, my brother... My older brother, when he plays Monopoly with me, he's always the banker, and for some reason, he always wins.
Yeah, well, that was why the game was made that way, because it's an educational game. The guy who invented the game, he was actually on his uppers. He was really starving, you know. It was way back in the good old bad days, I think late 30s or the 40s or whatever. And then he came up with the idea, and he made a lot of money out of it. But, I mean, he was starving, literally, him and his family, somewhere in America at the time. But he obviously had an idea how economics works, because Monopoly kind of is a good introduction to how the bank generally always wins.
Well, yeah, my brother, he would start off with the same amount of money as me, and then he'd end up having a lot of property, and he'd end up having a lot of money, and his stack just kept getting higher and higher, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to keep my eye on you, sucker, because I think you're cheating.
No, no, they're not cheating. It's just the way the game is planted to be in favor of the banker. By the way, we were talking the other day about plastic in the ocean, on the Pacific Ocean, and a few of the guys are working on making a website about it. We had an idea that we could try and raise money and go out with a ship to the Pacific Ocean and grab some of that plastic and bring it back ashore and turn it into oil. Did any of the guys come back to you on that?
No, nobody's got back to me personally on it, but I like the idea, because there was, I think it was in England, where they were turning plastic back into petrol. I mean, that's what it is. It's a petroleum product.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, plastic, you can take old plastic and you can melt it back down and it turns into oil. Mostly an oil more similar to diesel than petrol, but you can then take that and refine it further and make petrol. But the thing is, basically, it makes like a crude oil, and crude oil can be refined to make specific products. And we were trying to estimate which was the better way to do it. Was it go out to sea, get the stuff, turn it into oil and bring it back, or was it better to go out there and grab it and bring it ashore and turn it into oil ashore? So the consensus at that time was that it would be better to bring it back ashore and turn it into oil. And then the idea is that you set up the company so that it's basically only trying to clean up the sea. You know what I mean? It's
anything that we can do to... Anything we can do to clean...
This is funny. I put all the plastic in one area. So if you get out there, you can catch thousands and thousands of tons of it quickly.
Anything that we can do to clean up our environment is going to be beneficial. And just the fact that the people are out there actually thinking about that idea is a good step in the right direction, because, man, I'm telling you, we got to do something. And it's going to it's not going to come via any representation, and we're not going to be able to ask for permission to do these things, because... Of course, if you say, well, I'm going to take a ship out there and I'm going to get all this plastic, they're going to find some sort of government regulation to say, well, you can't do it. You know what I mean?
Well, at the moment, they can't stop you. The plastic is trash and it's out there on the sea, and you're not doing anything with it. You're scooping it up and you're putting it in the ship and you're bringing it back. However, you're correct in the fact that they'll try and find a government regulation. And the regulation they're going for in the future, and they're trying to stop Obama signing up to it, it's called the United Nations Convention on the Sea. And basically, what they would do is they would give the United Nations total ownership of everything in the high seas. Now, the disturbing part of that is the high seas is defined as even the rivers of America. You know, the rivers of Europe, the United Nations would, in effect, be able to control all water resources around the world, including places like Lake Erie and, you know, all the big lakes in America, and small lakes and small dams, would suddenly come under the control of the United Nations. So when you bring your little speedboat down to the lake and they say, you need a United Nations license to manipulate your speedboat around this, and you got to pay extra carbon tax or whatever, you'll actually be on foreign territory in America when you go on the river, big river, Mississippi, or some lake. Or, you know, if you're on the beach and you go for a swim, a boat can pull alongside and say, where's your license to swim?
Well, I agree with you, brother. Look, we're down to the wire.
$10 a year license to the United Nations to go for a swim on the beach.
We're down to the wire, and Live Mike has a pod for me to play after for his show. But you know, this has been a fascinating discussion, and we've covered a lot of ground. And to me, it's as simple as this, man. We the people, we got to get informed, we got to get awake, and we got to wake other people up, because we're knocking on the door of World War III, and if we don't stop it now, you know, hey. It's going to be an every man for himself kind of thing to survive after that, and I don't want my family living in a world such as that. So with that said, Dublin, I appreciate you being on the radio show here on the Knights of the Round Table. It has always been an amazing night of the Round Table, and I'm going to give you the last word before I take us up out of here.
Yeah, well, just keep fighting back is all we can do. Try and influence as many people as you can, some one way or the other. Do your best. We're all that, you know, we got. It's us, and there's no army going to come and rescue us. It's us against the whole bloody world, virtually. So as long as all the people in the world are united, we'll win, you know.
Well said, bro.
Well said. As far as I keep telling people, I know loads and loads of Muslims, and they're just as worried, and all they want to do is look after their kids and, you know, have a good life. They don't want none of this nonsense. So saying the Muslims is bad is as bad as saying the Americans are as bad. You know, it's the divide and conquer rule.
It's painting the world with a wide brush, brother, and it's a whole divide and conquer. And I'm with you all the way.
Yeah. Keep fighting back.
All right. Peace and love, everybody.
Are you going to fight just now, or are you going to put it on later?
Yep. It's an hour never. When World War III starts, it's too late.
As soon as you finish, the tape of Mike goes on. Okay, I'll listen to this podcast.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. Peace, everybody.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look.
Woman! Man! Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Always looking to serve the terrible and the knights of the round table.